everyone, and welcome to another episode of Wisdom Chat. And my wonderful guest today is Gareth Bottomley, who is the Business Development Manager for Autohorn Fleet Services. He's been not just in the auto trade, but the financial side as well for over 30 years. Gareth, it's really lovely to have you with me today. Thank you so much for your time.
It's no problem, Phil. You're making me sound old there, over 30 years, aren't you?
Yeah. No, I don't mean to do that. You're young at heart, as I say. So, Gareth, I mean, obviously, in terms of the present climate and what's actually happening, we're talking about the impact not just on the vehicles and the auto industry, but the impact on individuals. And we've just been through a pandemic, and obviously it's still around. And during that period of time, there were many occasions where people just weren't using their vehicles. And yeah. I know some perhaps were like myself, where they took the decision to reduce the number of vehicles that they have. I mean, what sort of impact have you been seeing in this market?
It's been a really challenging 2 years for the motor industry. Really challenging 2 years. The pandemic started in March 2020. You know, people sat with vehicles on the drive that they were not using. They were probably 80% of the cars in the UK are purchased in some kind of finance agreement. So they are paying a monthly payment on that vehicle. They're not earning. They're not working.
Yeah.
And they're looking at that cost and thinking, do I still need to take that cost further? Do I need to take it on after the pandemic, or do I need to reduce my cost? Now, that was going back 2 years ago. And I did see, as I came back to work from being on furlough, I saw clients coming to me and saying, look, I don't need my £700 a month payment anymore. Yeah. I can get a car that will do the same job for a lot less money. Let's have a conversation. So we started those conversations. Now, I think in the last 12 months, I think people have gone back to wanting to drive what they want to drive. Mm-hmm. We've seen that going forward. However, since we've now hit this cost of living crisis, which is starting to bite with people, the conversations I'm having now again with people is, look, I need to save some cash on what I'm spending per month. Because if I can save £60-70 a month, that's offset against the fuel I'm having to pay.
Yeah.
Do the same kind of mileage, you know. Yeah. So they're having to make these, not sacrifices, they're still going to get a very nice car, but they're having to make these decisions of where I'm going next. So, you know, the manufacturers, the supply and demand for the manufacturers, there is very little supply still, and there's high demand.
Yeah.
So price goes up, you know, that's the nature of the economy that we're in. You know, it's capitalism at work, isn't it? So it's...
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And but if we take a sort of an overview look at what's currently happening, you've mentioned the rising cost of living, which is going up significantly. Inflation's sitting around 9%. They anticipate they will go up to 10%. You know, by the end of the year, where it will be is anybody's guess, really. We've got the influence of what's going on around the market in terms of the supply of parts, I suppose, for vehicles. We've had that issue regarding the microchips and a lack there, which actually sent the cost of second-hand vehicles up. And now we've got the war in Ukraine, especially in the industrial heart of Ukraine, where, as you were saying earlier, many of the parts will come from.
Yeah.
So we've got all these things brought to bear. And so that's the global perspective. Do you see at any point in time that changing? Shifting in any way?
It's certainly not going to be in the short term, Phil. I think it will do, but we've still got semiconductor issues, you know, without a doubt. This isn't gone away. We've still got these issues with regard to semiconductors. You're exactly right in what you say. A lot of component parts are built in the Ukraine or made in the Ukraine, and now manufacturers having to find other suppliers for the component parts that they need. So having a knock-on effect on new car lead times of when they're going to arrive. You know, we got to a point where we were back down to around about 6 months on a lot of product.
Yeah.
That's now starting to creep again up to 9 months. We've got some product that I've got a poor client of mine who ordered his car back in May last year. and I'm still not sure when it's going to be built.
Oh, dear me.
And I can't tell him when it's going to be built either because the manufacturer can't tell me. So I'd be surprised if he gets it this year. He could have waited 18 months for his car.
Yeah.
You know, which is horrendous, really.
It is. And then you can understand why the second-hand market has really gone the other way. I mean,
probably the first driver towards the rising inflation, the used car market.
We saw
inflation start to creep up to around about 4%, but that was before the energy crisis. Some of that was driven by the used car market being so buoyant, in the fact that we can't get new cars, so people are having to buy used cars if they need something quickly.
Yeah.
But of course, then the price goes up.
We've always been used to that. I remember being told when a new car rolls off the forecourt, it diminishes by at least £1,000. And so you think of used cars as much cheaper vehicles. And it's just interesting hearing the stories of some people where they've bought a used car, and within a short space of time, the value of that car has gone up, not down.
I bought my wife's car last May. I can sell it today for more than I paid for it.
Yeah, yeah. So then you start to think about why people are making those choices that you alluded to earlier about, do I actually need that? Can I do this cheaper? You know, that's one of the principles I teach within financial wellbeing, is a way of actually looking at our spending plans and asking ourselves certain questions that perhaps we've not been used to asking ourselves. And that is, do I actually need it? Could I postpone it? Could I get rid of it altogether? Do I actually need it, or avoid certain things? Or replace them with something cheaper.
Certainly where cars are involved, and going around to the real base level of it, is that journey absolutely necessary in the car?
Yeah.
Can I walk? Can I take a bike? Can I do other things? And I think people are looking that way now. I know I am. Mm. There's journeys I used to take. I didn't used to think anything of it. I used to jump in the car and travel a mile and then come back. Now I'll consider walking that mile. You know, it's one, it's better for my health, but two, I don't really need to take the car for that.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose a lot more people are doing that. I'm doing the same, like you say. And it's interesting, though, depending on what I'm going for, if I've got a meeting and the weather's a bit inclement, the last thing I want to do is turn up there like a drowned rat.
Absolutely.
So I look at how can I travel there in the best way possible. And it's, you know, just to jump in a car is so convenient.
It is,
But then you've got other aspects, haven't you? You know, where do I park and so on. On the other hand, there's times when I'm going to meet somebody. Say, for example, I'm networking and I'm just meeting them for a coffee and a chat. I could go by, I've got a mountain bike, so I could go on my bike as long as I've got somewhere secure to leave it. Or I can walk. Not everybody's got that option, really. You know, if you've got people in rural areas, it might be just a little bit too far to walk.
It is. I had a meeting in Leeds town centre before about 3 weeks ago. And for the last 20 years, I would have just jumped in the car, drive to Leeds, park in Leeds, go to the meeting, come home. Parking in Leeds now and fuel costs probably going to be, for a 3-hour meeting, going to be in the region of £15 to £20.
Right.
There's a free car park at the train station. It's £1.50 each way.
Yeah.
And these things you have to start thinking about, you know, cost of living is going to start biting really hard. You know, the energy price cap's going up again in October. You know, it's going to really affect people.
Yeah, now they're talking about the price cap going up 42%. So up to recently, it was around 32%. So this is what we're now hearing, particularly from Ofgem. And, you know, it just seems rather bizarre, doesn't it, how much this is increasing and the impact they will have on people. And I just wonder, you've alluded to it in so much as you talked about, now we're asking ourselves, do I actually need this? Can I travel in a different way? Can I do it cheaper?
People still need cars, Phil. People will always need cars. I think people are now looking at the fact of, do I need a diesel car or a petrol car? Do I need something that's currently doing 40 miles to the gallon? Can I look at something doing 60 miles to the gallon? Yeah. Do I go towards plug-in hybrid, as most of my journeys are less than 30 miles and I can do them on electric? Am I an early adopter and can go full electric? Although obviously pricing of the electricity has gone up. I saw an article in the paper today that the fast chargers on the commercial fast chargers, the price is soaring on the commercial fast chargers.
Right.
So if people are going electric, still the best way to pay for that is to charge it at home on their domestic charge. So it's just something that people need to be aware of. But people are now having those thoughts in their own mind and having those conversations with me. You know, it's very rare that I had a conversation a year ago where somebody said, "Oh, what's the miles per gallon?" You know, it didn't matter to them. It wasn't relevant.
Yeah, yeah.
But now it is. Now it is, because they're having to take all these costs into equation.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just thinking, just on a slightly different note, but again, you've kind of touched on it a bit. And it's this driver to protect the environment, and why, you know, the goals set by government with regards to converting to electric. What was it to convert cars by 2030?
Well, there'll be no new petrol or diesel internal combustion engines cars sold from 2030. They'll have to be either plug-in hybrid or electric. Now, plug-in hybrid with a combustion engine will go by 2035. So by 2035, there'll be no internal combustion engines at all sold. New. Used, of course, there will be. There'll be around, certainly in my lifetime, there'll still be petrol and diesel engines.
Yeah.
New cars will all be electric or plug-in hybrid by 2030.
So bearing that in mind then, and our need to sort of protect the environment, but at the same time, knowing what we know about the rising costs of living and so on, what would your advice be to somebody who's now sort of beginning to consider a vehicle and the type of vehicle we go for? I mean, you and I had a conversation a little while back, and I'd said to you, at the moment, if I was to go electric, I'd probably lean towards more hybrid plug-in to start with, because I know I've got a period of time before that you're no longer able to acquire those type of vehicles. But it also gives a period of time in which the infrastructure can develop much further than it is.
Yeah, electric's a really interesting debate, Phil. And I think that there is a how I try and explain it to my clients is, we have to get away from filling up. Okay. Yep. At the moment, we use our petrol or our diesel or whatever we're putting into our cars, and we watch the fuel gauge go down to a quarter tank or less than a quarter tank, and we go and fill up.
Yeah.
I think with electric, you have to get into the habit of topping up.
Right.
So wherever you stop, you top up. So if you go to the supermarket, you find a charger at the supermarket and you plug it in.
Yeah.
If you go into town, if you go into the cities, you go and find a car park with a charging point and you plug it in. You don't run it until it's low. You just keep topping it up. Range of these cars is getting so much better. You know, 95% of them now will do over 200 miles. And I think I read an article that 95% of journeys in the UK are less than 30 miles.
Yeah.
So if 95% of our journeys are less than 30 miles, an electric car works for everybody.
Yeah. But you still have to consider that journey, don't you? Because you've got to consider, on that particular journey, where are the charging points?
If you aren't charged to full, yes.
Yeah.
If you're only going 30 miles and you charge to full, then you've got no issue, because you can always get back home to charge up.
Yeah.
If you were traveling from, you're in Harrogate, I'm in Leeds. If we're traveling to London, we've got to make some sensible decisions about where I'm stopping.
Yeah.
To top my car up. Now that's just a change in driving habits. That's setting off 40 minutes earlier than I would normally, or whatever it needs to be. And by the time I can get a coffee at a service station, I've got enough charge in my car to get me to the distance.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a habit change, is electric.
It is. And it was just, I was thinking about it from a point of view that My in-laws used to live in Cornwall. They used to live in a little hamlet, you know, down sort of near to the coast in Cornwall. And the journey there was about 9 hours. And there are whole sections of it where you're literally driving through sort of rural countryside, tiny lanes. There's no places to top up or anything like that.
No.
And it just caused me to think, yeah, if I was still doing that journey, which we don't, fortunately, we don't have to now, I would have to do that. I'd have to plan. And so you're right. It changes your whole sort of concept of, you know, planning a journey. I don't just get in the car and just say, oh, well, let's see how far we get and decide where we're going to stop. You know,
well, you know, petrol stations were all over the place. Wherever you drove, there was a petrol station a mile away, wasn't there? You know, it wasn't an issue.
The
infrastructure, I say, I've not looked at the numbers recently, but last time I checked, there was over 19,000 charging points in the UK.
Right.
And that might have increased a lot more since then, since I looked. But there was only about 7,500 petrol stations.
Yeah, but in each forecourt of each petrol station, you could have upwards of, say, 8 pumps.
You could, without a doubt.
Yeah.
The other thing is you've got to know where the charging points are. There's lots of technology out there now.
With
apps on phones that will tell you exactly where everything is. They're just not on the side of the road like a petrol station is.
Yeah. It just reminds me of when I used to travel through the London Underground. It got so bad that I would be looking at the app to know exactly where to stand on the platform to get onto the train and where it would drop me off so I could go straight for the exit. And in a way, you're kind of thinking in that same vein with regards to your
travel. That goes back to planning your journey. Journey by doing something, and you do that with electric. So I think, electric's a really interesting debate. It's not going away. Technology's getting better and better. Will we ever get to a point where we are effectively Wi-Fi driving as we're going down the motorway?
Yeah.
You know, Wi-Fi charging, if you like. Maybe. Who knows?
Who knows?
That is science fiction to me.
Yeah. It's interesting. The principles that I teach in financial wellbeing, which are about how one aspect of reducing anxiety around money is to have a plan.
Mm.
We're doing the same principle in things like our journeys around the country and even abroad. I mean, just touch on that for a moment, because you were telling me earlier about the cost of fuel abroad. And just say that again about...
Yeah, I was away in Greece last week. I hired a car in Greece, and it was, of course, like all hire companies, we got the car full and we return it full, you know, in fuel. And I filled this little car up, and they were charging €2.65 a litre. Which I'm not great at conversion, but I would have thought it'd be around about £2.50, £2.50 a litre in sterling.
Yeah.
Which is considerably more than we're paying. So this is biting across Europe as well. You know, it's not just a UK situation. You know, what we at now, about 170, I would have thought, for petrol.
It's average 170, 180, something like that, around that area. But it's interesting to let our listeners know that, you know, what we are seeing and what we're experiencing here in the UK is happening globally. So it's not just us.
We're not isolated with this. It's across Europe from what I've seen. So it's been
Well, Gareth, that's been really interesting. And I'm just mindful, if people want to sort of check things out regarding the auto market, if they're considering vehicles, what type of vehicles and so on, how would they get hold of you?
All my contact details are on LinkedIn, Phil. Best place, just find me on LinkedIn, Gareth Bottomley, Auto Home Fleet Services. All my contact details are there, email, phone numbers, anything you want to do. If people want a no obligation chat, just have a conversation about cars, by all means, pick up the phone. Happy to have a conversation with anybody.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Gareth. It's been lovely having a chat with you, and all the best. And I hope things begin to change and the market becomes a little bit better for you as well. So thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Phil.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.